Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Moen Show with your boy here, Tim Moen. And of course, young Jared is back and joins us. And this episode is brought to you by our proud sponsor, Ninja Creamy. Delicious protein ice cream. Look at this.
This sounds like a streamer's name.
This is a pint of ice cream right there. My own recipe, 300 calories, 55 grams of protein. I mean, the perfect post-workout thing. This is going to keep me full for like 2 or 3 hours. And when you're in a calorie deficit like your boy here, been getting grumpy and shredded for the beach in about a month, you need tricks like this, guys.
Yes, same.
Just kidding. This episode isn't sponsored by anyone, but Ninja Creamy, if you're listening, you know, we'll take your money. Got a great product.
Big listener base.
Huge. All right. Well, what's young Jared been up to? I see you started your own damn podcast, Born in a Barn.
Yeah, it's more of a, I think more of a vlog is the direction I'm taking it instead of a podcast necessarily, because it seems the clicks I'm getting are mostly on the socials. It's not necessarily on like YouTube or people watching full episodes. So we're going to kind of take it in stride and see how it goes.
So you're going to cut it up into little clips and...
The clips are doing numbers, and just kind of like videos of my guests doing dumb shit are doing numbers. So we'll kind of take off from there.
Explain to me what this is. I haven't actually looked at your stuff yet. But you're just, is it a day in the life of a young Jared, or is it, are you guys, what are you doing? Like,
well, the podcast episodes that are out are just guests who I thought would just be funny to like sit around and have a beer with. Review a local beer at the start of every episode. Gotcha. And my vision for it is to do get my guests to come do things that I would do, get them out of their element a little bit, make like a 10-minute video of that, and then if we did a podcast episode, do that after, of like breaking it down, like what we did, right, kind of thing. Right. Okay. Instead of just strictly podcast content based, it would be kind of, you know, cooking, horses, guns, gotcha, activities. Yeah.
Out there in the world.
Just doing what young Jared would do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's very fascinating getting a peek into the life of a young Jared.
Yeah.
You got dogs, you got an Oilers thing. I mean, who is this guy?
We love sports, and we love the outdoors.
Oh, boy.
And we love beers.
We love beers. Cool. Well, okay. Today, I thought we would talk about, here's the thing. I've been waking up and doing the thing you're not supposed to do, which is going immediately to social media, particularly Twitter, to see what's going on Twitter. You never do that, young Jared. When in all my years, I found that your day never goes great when you get out of bed on the wrong side, so to speak. And the wrong side is looking at social media before partaking in a practice of attitude of gratitude or something like that. You know, you want to start the day off, you want to hack your brain, but your boy hasn't been doing that properly lately. And couple that with a calorie deficit, you know, I just
get not the greatest for mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. And the two things that have been triggering me today that I thought it would be actually kind of informative and fun to talk with young Jared about are kind of hotly contested issues in the libertarian circles, and that is borders and abortions.
The two B's.
I like it. Hold on. My Coke Zero that I have, I don't know if you can see that. It's fizzing for some reason. I don't understand what's going on here.
Was it frozen?
No. I don't know. It just heard borders and abortions, and it's foaming at the mouth too. It's doing exactly what I feel on the inside when I see people arguing about this. And let me explain what triggers me about this. I'll see a libertarian arguing for closed borders, let's say, and I'll see and saying how wrong those open border libertarians are. And I'll see some right-wing alt-right people pile on, go, yeah, you stupid open border libertarians or commies. No, you don't get to make fun of open borders libertarians. You believe in the fucking government. You believe in the state. Here's what you look like. You are in your house and you have a a bad guy in your house and he's just manhandling you. He's got you bent over the kitchen sink and he's violating and he's taking half the food in your fridge and he's marching your kids off to wars that he started. And you're looking over your shoulder, giving him a look back and saying, hey, when you're not too busy, can you stop that other trespasser stepping on my lawn? Please, sir. No. You're very different than an open border libertarian. An open border libertarian at least has the dignity and the principles to say, I may not want that trespasser on my lawn. I may want to close that border. But I sure as hell don't want this guy doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a bad dream. It's a bad
dream. I don't know. Okay, let me talk to you. Okay, well, first of all, young Jared, let's hear the normie version of border policy. You're a normie. You think about border policy. How do you weigh out what border policy should be or how to think of national borders?
To me, honestly, I think everybody should deserve somewhat of a chance, right? If you're going to come across legally and be a contributing member of society, then I don't see any issue with that. I mean, I feel like there should be vetting involved given the current global climate of acts of terrorism and treason. So that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm not all for everybody jumping on boats and trying to make the trek across because I think that's A, dangerous, and B, detrimental. So I think we got to do it properly. But
okay, well, I'll lay out for you the way libertarians think of it. I'll try to make the best case from an open borders libertarian perspective and the best case from a closed borders libertarian perspective. What you are describing is a managed border, a closed border, so to speak, right? Not just a free for all, but there should be some rules in place about who comes over and that sort of thing, right? Well, open borders libertarians are basically, here's their stance. They're basically like, fuck the government. The government has no right to do shit. And it certainly doesn't have the right to stop a person going from point A to point B. And it certainly doesn't have the right, unless it's onto your property, then maybe the government has a role to play. Hey, you shouldn't trespass on other people's property. You shouldn't take their stuff. You shouldn't harm them. That's the only thing the government, but it shouldn't stop a person from moving from point A to point B. And even if that's across a border, an imaginary line that separates one tax plantation from the next tax plantation.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, and an anarchist would say it's all illegitimate, that these are just arbitrary constructs that, you know, just because two gangs staked out a territory, called it one territory Canada and the other territory the US, doesn't mean that they actually own any property. Government doesn't own anything. It takes shit from other people. It never homesteads anything. It simply plunders and conquers. That's all it does. It's not a farming operation. It doesn't go out and plow a field or homestead some land and say, yeah, this is my land as determined by my labor and my homesteading of it,
yeah,
biological action. It just says planting a flag and everything we see and more is ours. No, it's not yours. That's not how property ownership comes into being. So an open borders libertarian and closed border libertarian both agree that property ownership is, you know, government doesn't own property because it just steals property from other people. So it has no legitimate claim on whether a person moves from point A to point B. You can't trespass on government property because there is no such thing as government property. Government can't own property. It can only take steal property that someone else previously owned. Okay. So an open borders libertarian basically just says, look, you government is illegitimate. Now, a closed border libertarian, which I put myself in this camp. If you, you know, I've if I was, well, when I ran the Libertarian Party, we had a border policy that was closed border, but it sought to get government out of border control because we recognize that, look, government is not good at anything it does. And it's certainly not good at immigration. Like, it doesn't know the right amount of people to bring into the country, the right amount to keep out. It doesn't know the best people to come into the country, the best people to keep out. Government people in government are self-interested. They're interested in growing and maintaining power. And to think that the government is ever going to have a sensible border policy is retarded. I'm sorry, but it's never going to have it. It's either going to be too closed or too open, or
there's going to be no in between.
There's it doesn't know the right amount. So when the PPC comes out with policies that say 100,000 people, that's our quota. Well, how do you know that's the right amount? Maybe it's a lot smaller than that. Maybe it should be smaller than that. Maybe it should be a bit bigger than that. Yeah. Who are you, the government, to tell, to figure out? So the policy that I came up with was that book I loaned you, Democracy, the God That Failed by Hans Hermann Hoppe. Yep. He's a noted libertarian scholar, and his policy was, look, until we privatize all property, we have to do the least evil thing. We have to choose between the least evil thing, right? On the one hand, you can have open borders, but in the presence of a government, what an open border is essentially saying it's a prohibition on land ownership. At the same time, it's saying that there should be no rules on that land. So it's government imposed lawlessness. It would be like a public school having zero rules about who can go in and out of it, or what people can do. Right. And so, obviously
be like the border purge.
Right. On the one hand, an open border libertarian may say, well, look, that's government property. So of course government can't restrict anyone from going on it. Government can't own that. It has no authority there. But those of us that live in the real world, where we have public schools and we can't change that fact anytime soon, would think it's sensible to have rules, right? Like maybe we shouldn't have people shooting up heroin in the middle of the hallway and like lighting bonfires in classrooms and warming their hands up and, just taking desks out and...
like public schools lawless,
right? And so that if you had that in public schools, that would be, some people call it, there's this term floating around, another thing that grinds my gears is this term anarcho-tyranny, which a lot of conservative pundits are using to describe what's happening in these leftist cities, right? Where it's just lawless. People running into stores, grabbing things and leaving. People setting up homeless encampments and just open drug scene and all this, right? They call that anarcho-tyranny. I call that state-imposed lawlessness. There's no private property owner that would allow that kind of bullshit to happen on their property. They'd hire security. They would enforce some rules. And so... on the one hand, you have libertarians say, well, the government has no right to restrict people from setting up tents and doing drugs out in the open. On the other hand, if we were to follow their ideology or their principles to the logical conclusion, those cities would actually be privatized and there would be absolutely no tolerance for any of that bullshit in their cities in real life. So it's a little disingenuous to say that you're in favor of people setting up homeless encampments in the middle of a city park when your private city would never allow that, but because
not in my backyard,
right? So, right. Okay. So now the big difference though, between, I will say this, closed border libertarians and open border libertarians have a lot more in common than a closed border libertarian and a closed border right-wing person. Okay. Listen, because it's for the simple fact that the right-wing person believes in the legitimacy of the state, and they are essentially saying, we want closed borders and we want this gang of pedophile extortionist lockdowning human trafficking thugs to be in charge of the borders. And that is fucking ridiculous. That's more ridiculous than open borders from a libertarian perspective. So anyway, there's my rant about that. Any thought?
I mean, you definitely have a lot deeper thoughts on it than I do. I mean, when I talk border control, I think of Texas, where they're like, we want to run shit our way, and then they stick it to the government and go to court and all that. That's kind of like where my head is at. And then like just hearing the libertarian perspective is definitely different. It's like a lot of similarities, but it's different delivery for sure.
Well, it is a completely different way of thinking about things. Thinking about things from first principles is, you know, it means that, I mean, it's just difficult to get things across to, I guess, people that have never thought in those terms before, right? Because most people are living their life thinking, okay, Canada, you know, they've never even considered what is Canada, like what it's a country. Well, what is a country? Well, it's, you know, where we live with the flags and the, you know, the anthems and the CBC and like, okay, but what defines that? What, you know, to define what a country is, how do you, you know, and I mean, that's a very difficult thing to define without using like circular reasoning. But if you follow things through and do as Confucius says, which is call things by their proper name and actually describe what's going on in objective terms without the propaganda bullshit, what you have is a group of individuals who are essentially no different than any other criminal gang staking out a territory. And we define our culture and our nation based on that claim they've staked. So it's basically a criminal gang that has determined and established what Canada is, and we're all patriotic and rah-rah about this tax farm. Well, can we at least acknowledge that we're on a tax farm before and you know, stop encouraging the bastards? And yes, having more slaves come onto this plantation is creating a real problem. But let's never lose sight of the fact that we're on a goddamn plantation, and maybe we should stop asking the master to do so much shit and start looking at how we get rid of them and how we part this land out to the individual slaves that are actually doing the work and actually own it. Anyways, that's borders.
the plantation analogy. That's a deep one.
Well, I mean, look, if we have complete chattel slavery, it would be like 100% of what the product of my labor goes to my master, right?
Which it feels that way sometimes.
Here it's only 50%. So if 100% is full on slavery, what's 50%? Still, it's half slavery. It's not zero slavery, right? I mean, we're allowed to leave the plantation with permission. We get passports and papers from our government, but we got to be back, and we got to, you know, there are certain rules and regulations. We can't just travel around, and no one seems to have any issue with this, you know, at all. In fact, yeah, but
hey, we did it to ourselves.
We did it to ourselves. Damn it.
Time and time again.
Yeah. And I mean, there are all sorts of problems too with, the idea of closed borders, because it's like, okay, well, where do you stop with closed borders? Like, what about provincially? Should we have closed borders provincially? Like, maybe we're getting too many Newfoundlanders and Ontarians in Alberta. Maybe we should close the border to them. Should we set up border guards and keep other Canadians out of Alberta? Why or why not? You know, are they lowering the price of our labor here? Are, you know, all those kinds, all the arguments that people make for against international immigration, you can make for internal immigration, internal migration, right? So there are serious problems with it, which is why we need to get the government out of it and, you know, just allow land to be privately owned. And then it's just a simple matter of trespasser or no trespasser, and the property owner decides, you know. And, you know, obviously people who are in good standing, who, you know, have no red flags, aren't, you know, they would have much easier time traveling around and moving around than people who have red flags all over them. And, you know, have criminal past and that sort of thing, or are behaving.
Access to browser history for that screening for sure.
Maybe that's what, you know, what I as a property owner or road owner would require. It's like I'm taking on a liability by just letting people into my, let's say I own a city, for example. let's say I own a city and I have a bunch of residents who would pay me an annual fee to keep the law in order and keep things nice. Who am I going to let into that city and who am I not going to let into that city, right? I mean, these are things that will determine how much money I can make, what kind of profit I can get. If my city turns into Edmonton, I'm going to be losing money hand over fist. No one's going to want to pay for that. So I'm going to have to clean up the streets. I'm going to have to keep people off the out of public parks, you know, and
you could just be Edmonton's libertarian Batman.
Well, that's right.
Go fight crime in the LRT.
Amen. Yeah. And I mean, we'll probably have a security force or police force that escorts people to city limits. If we find them camping in public places or doing bad things in public places.
There's something came up about like tent cities. Somebody's banning, I forget what state, somebody was banning like camping outdoors and taking away like homeless shelters. So basically they're like, okay, so you're homeless, but also we're not going to help you and you're not allowed to camp here. So kick right. rocks. I forget what state that was. I'll find it here.
Well, I mean, that's what charities are for.
Yeah, I guess.
But the benefit of charities is that they aren't, you know, charity is tricky, right? Like you see what's happening right now. We see a rise of opiate addiction. We see a rise of like just entitled people living on the street doing whatever. We're feeding the wildlife and we're encouraging more of it. Right. And so we're socializing all the negativity of it and the cost of it. But it's the individuals that have to live in those areas and walk in those areas that are really paying the price. So how do you deal with it? How would a charity deal with someone who is, let's say, unemployable and an addict, but you run the charity and you have a real heart to help these people out? Would you continually enable drug use, or you'd probably put some pressure on them to clean up their act. You'd probably try to connect them with jobs. You'd probably try to do all this thing. I mean, there wouldn't be an endless supply of just, here's some more money, go get high. Here's some more money, go get high. Here's some more money, go get high. Here's a hotel room, go ahead and trash it. Here's another hotel room, go ahead and trash it. And here's some money, go get high in it.
Here's a place to make sure your drugs are safe.
Right, right. So exactly. You might have, maybe you'd have a safe injection site. Maybe you'd have a job board up and maybe you'd have some requirements of people. Listen, we'll give you supply, a safe supply of drugs, but here are the requirements. We're going to get you into treatment. We're going to get you, you know, connected to this for job interviews. We're going to, you know, and they did this. I can't remember if it was in Portugal or somewhere else. What they did was they set up job boards at these safe injection sites. And what they found was that addicts would come in and they would go get jobs. And once they got jobs and they're feeling better about themselves, a lot of addicts just stopped using altogether. It was just like, that was the cure. It was like, I feel
employment,
like a useful part of society now. And I don't, you know, and suddenly the drug addiction goes away. So, you know, I mean, these are tricky things to do. And there's certainly, the government is not adept to deal with them. But you know, at the same time, like you can't have state imposed lawlessness. I refuse to use the term anarcho tyranny, but that's essentially what's happening in a lot of cities right now, is just state imposed lawlessness, rulelessness, right? You would never have this in your own house. You have a kid under your roof who is, you know, being, let's call it, just being self-destructive and nasty and engaging on the wrong things. You don't tolerate that under your roof. I mean, you try to help them out, but at a certain point they get evicted from your property, right?
Yeah. You gotta make your case to stay.
Right. Right. So, you know, there has to be some tough love involved. And I'm not saying that it's easy or that there's any one size fits all answer. But the statists are saying that. The statists are saying there's one size fits all answer, and it's called the government. The government. And then both sides will argue ad nauseum about the best way to deal with a problem that is like nuanced and context specific to every single case and every single different environment and city. And they'll try to, you know, treat it as if it's a one size fits all issue. But what we need is like entrepreneurs and private property owners, millions of them, to actually, you know, be solution oriented. And that's how you solve these problems. So I don't think anyone would want to see a homeless addict starving and like be heartless enough to evict them, to like stick them on an ice floe and throw them, you know, put them adrift or something. But they certainly wouldn't tolerate the kind of shit that's going on right now either. Right. There would be a myriad of solutions that would come up.
I think there's a lot of ignorance to it too.
Absolutely.
People don't understand the extent.
Yeah. People don't understand what these people have gone through, and there are those that have, and you know, the problem right now is the people that are in charge of solving the problem are just get an endless supply of money. Right. And there's no accountability to solving it. Like, are you actually solving addiction? Are you making it better or are you making it worse? Are you making this problem? Are you exacerbating it or are you making it better? Well, it doesn't matter. You're going to get more money anyways. Whereas at least a charity or a private organization that is tasked with, has made it its mission to solve this problem, the metrics better be going the right direction or their people aren't going to give them money anymore. And that's the bottom line. So,
yeah, there's definitely some, I think people turning a blind eye to it a little bit, or the people who have voiced strong opinions don't necessarily understand what they're voicing, or like don't understand what, like they haven't been to ground zero, haven't seen what the issues are at hand. And then they're just like voicing blanket opinions based on like background and demographics, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the problem with the internet is that everyone thinks their opinion matters and that it's valid. And that's just not the case. I mean, but that's democracy for you. Everyone's opinion is the same. We all have the same vote, right?
So that means I'm allowed to say whatever I want and post it on the internet.
You can say whatever you want and post it on the internet and think it's just as valid as what I said, right?
100%.
As if, right?
Hey, the internet is forever, but you know what? Democracy says that I'm allowed to use it to my advantage.
Yeah, well.
Or undoing, I guess. Whatever comes first.
You obviously haven't finished reading that book yet. Democracy, the God that failed.
No, I started it. I go through phases when I'm reading. I'll read a lot and then take like 2 weeks off.
I'm the same way. The same way. All right. What's next? Okay. Oh yeah, abortion. Another light subject.
Yeah, keeping it light today.
Keeping it light.
Nice, okay. Thursday afternoon.
Well, okay. Again, there are. This abortion is a tricky subject, and it's couched often between pro-choice and pro-life. I mean, those are the two camps. Everything is put into two camps that are equally fucking stupid and binary and statist. Let's never forget statist. Every single time there's a left-right issue, it's actually just two sides of the same coin. How can we get a gang of pedophilic human trafficking thugs to solve this problem? Right?
How?
And with the abortion, it's like, how can we get a group of pedophilic human trafficking thugs who steal all our money to either fund more abortions or stop more abortions? And I take issue with the very premise of the question, how do we get a gang of human trafficking pedophilic thugs? Let's stop right there. We don't get them to do anything. Okay. So if there's a problem here, let's think of other ways to solve it. That's how I look at the issue. And there is a problem. And let's hear your views on abortion.
My views on abortion. Oh boy. I
mean, how do you think about abortion? Do you have strong views one way or another?
I feel like most things, I maintain a pretty level head in the fact that, like, as far as I know, I'm not going to be receiving an abortion anytime soon. So I don't think that my voice should really carry any merit in this conversation. I think the people who are having abortions should be able to choose whether or not they get one. I mean, okay, I don't think.
Do you think you should be allowed to have an abortion? You, Jared, should you be able to terminate your parental obligations?
If I want to and it's my kid, then I think I should be able to. If I don't want to and it's still my kid, then I don't have to, right? Like, it's you, it should, I don't know. I guess
you would favor legislation to allow or favor, for a while there, I think it was in Sweden, there was a party that was trying to push this idea of male abortions, which is the idea of, before a baby is born, you as the presumed father of the child could give up or could negate your obligation to pay child support till the kid was 18 or whatever, if you also agreed to gave up your right as a parent to see that child. And I thought that was interesting, right? Because
that is interesting. It's a different approach.
Because, you know, women, they can terminate their parental obligations by just killing the thing. We're not allowed to kill the thing. And, you know, we have no way of terminating our parental responsibility at all as men, but women do. So I thought that, anyways, thought that was an interesting.
I've never heard of that. I mean, haven't been in that scenario where I would rather go completely against the grain of like a partner's opinion or whatever to the extent where I would want to do that. But then, right. I mean, I think if you want to be able to do that, that should be within your power and within your rights to do so. I don't think that it should be.
And you made a comment, Jared, that you said, well, I'm not going to have an abortion. I'm not a woman. So it's not my place to say, you know, what goes on in a woman's body, which sounds like a real cuck thing to say.
I mean, I don't want women coming and telling me to do whatever, right? They're telling me that I have to like get a vasectomy or that I'm not allowed to get a vasectomy. Okay. I don't want somebody else coming to tell me to do that. Right. So if you want to have an abortion, have an abortion. If you don't want to have an abortion, don't have an abortion. Okay. And then,
but Jared, if a mom said, you know what, I'm going to strangle my child and put him out of his misery today because it's too much. My body, my choice. He's hanging off of me. I have to work night and day to support this kid and look after him. I just don't want to labor for this kid anymore. It's my body, my choice. I'm going to strangle that kid. Do you think your opinion would be valid if you said, hey, don't strangle that kid?
I mean, at that point, it's definitely not her body, her choice. Like, there's a certain age. I don't know the exact anatomy or gestational age where we should cut it off or not be able to cut it off. I don't know the answer to that, right? I do know that, you know, once the baby is out, for sure. I'm not saying that's the age where the abortion cutoff is, but if the baby's out and you chose to go through with that, then that's no longer your body or your choice. That's a human that you got to take care of. I think that up until a certain spot,
you're defending yourself from having to look after this kid. It's like,
okay, well then put it up for adoption or, you know, foster it.
There we go. So you're saying that you don't have a right to just bash its skull in and throw it out. You have to evict the child safely, right?
Yes.
You have to find a human out there that is willing to take care of them and safely evict that child and transfer custody to that other person. So what you are describing would also then apply to an unborn baby. It's like you have to safely evict that child to someone else. You can't just kill it because that's not your body. That's someone else's body.
I mean, sure, I guess.
Look at that. We got him to flip.
I mean, I wouldn't say like...
Women, Jared is telling you what to do with your body, telling you you can't defend your body from that little fucker.
Okay, now you're twisting me here. Now you're twisting me. I still stand. If you want to do it, go ahead, go nuts. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Like, just stop worrying about what other people are doing.
Okay, well, let me tell you the libertarian thinking on this. There's libertarians on both sides of the issue. Walter Block is a famous kind of libertarian scholar, economist. He wrote about this issue. He thinks he came up with a solution to kind of cross the bridge between pro-choice and pro-life. And he calls it evictionism, which is basically this: you have the right to evict, but not kill. And so that applies to a guest in your house or a guest in your wound, in your womb. All right. So you invite someone over. At some point, they become a trespasser. You don't want them there anymore. Maybe they start rearranging your internal organs a little bit or something. And you're like, I don't like that. I want this person, this human being. So he says, let's assume that fetus is a person. I'll grant you that right off the bat. If it's a person, you still have the right to evict that person. You just don't have the right to kill it. So he makes the argument that at some point, technology is going to become good enough that you will be able to evict a 12-week fetus without killing it. And when technology advances to that point, you will then have an obligation to evict that child in a way that doesn't kill it. You can't just kill it then, right? So, but until then, he says, look, it's basic castle doctrine. You need to evict someone. You have to do it safely. But if there is no safe way of doing it, you still have the right to evict. Even if a guest comes over and, I don't know, they overstay their welcome or they insult my family, and for whatever reason, the only way to evict them is to kill them and chop them up and shove them through the mail slot. Well, so be it. I can abort them through the mail slot. and in this analogy, young Jared, the mail slot is the vagina and the house is the womb or something.
I never would have guessed that, actually. I'm glad you spelled it out, because I was kind of getting lost with all the big words.
So that's how he thinks about it. Now, I don't know. I'm still undecided about all this, like, because the thing is, people will pick apart the argument like this. It's like, okay, if I invite a guest onto my hot air balloon, I can't just throw him out when I decide I don't want him there anymore. Right.
Yeah.
I have to land the balloon safely and take him out. And so a pro-lifer will say, well, I mean, what you're doing when you get pregnant is you've taken action to create a person and you've put them in a dangerous situation, and now you have to get them to safety. Like, it's, you're obligated to get that person to safety. And I can see merits to that. So I don't know.
I don't think I'm equipped to be making that decision for other people, for sure. I think, well, again, yeah, I've said what I said. I stand by it. Do what you want to do. And if people don't like it, then tell them not to look, I guess.
Well, what about it makes no sense to me that, look, a third trimester baby is certainly, it's arbitrary to make birth the distinction between life and non-life, or person and non-person, right? Even a baby that is born can be considered, like, a baby isn't.
It's not sentient. Yeah, it's just a bag of cells.
Even a born baby is still technically, I can't remember who said this. Maybe it was Peter Singer, but because human babies are born so prematurely, gestationally, compared to other animals, like other animals, when they're born, they can actually function, right? Like, they can stand, they can walk, they can find their mom's tit, they can, they can do things. Like, they're babies. But our babies, when they're born, they're still fetuses. They can't do a damn thing. They can't crawl, they can't locomote in any way. And because humans, because of our giant brains and our head size, compared to our hip size, humans have to be born much earlier gestationally, and they're essentially born prematurely compared to most other animals. And so they're essentially an extra utero fetus. They're outside the uterus, but they're still essentially a fetus, right? And so, you know, some morally scrupulous philosophers like Peter Singer will say, well, there's, you know, you could still abort that baby even when they're outside the womb.
I mean, yeah, you can, you can technically still abort me if you wanted to.
Right, right. Well, and actually, I believe I remember reading that in Germany, just prior to the Nazis, it was actually not uncommon for women to have what was called late abortions, where they didn't want to be a parent, but they didn't have really any kind of abortions back then. So they would deliver the baby and then just bash its brains in and throw it in the garbage. But they just viewed it as, you know, an unwanted fetus.
I mean, the moral compass always points back to like post World War I Germany, you know?
Oh, so it's those guys.
They had it all figured out. Everything from 1900 to 1945, Germany had it nailed down.
Right, right. Actually, an interesting thing about Germany in that time, there was someone who went back. I'm trying to remember. They did all this research to try to figure out. Because they noticed, look, there are some Nazis that were very exuberant and loved doing what they were doing and loved just shoving those Jews into ovens and doing that stuff. But then there were moral heroes who went against the grain, took great personal risks, and like saved Jews at great risk to themselves. So what was the difference? And they were trying to look at like socioeconomic demographics, all these different things.
Well, look at like Hitler's youth, for example. Like a lot of the SS members that were rolling around at the end of the war versus the SS that like were there pre-war, like World War II. Like the SS members at the end had like grown up groomed to like hate the Jewish people, to hate everybody who's not the Aryan race, and they came out like nasty, right? And then by the end of it, they're the ones committing like mass genocide of like shootings, right? They're the ones that are just lining people up and shooting them in mass graves. Like, and so like,
gotta there's get them when they're young, get them in those public schools, right?
Yeah. And I watched, there's another documentary, like The Forgotten Holocaust, I think it was called. And it talks about how there's like a whole extra, like probably 1 to 2 million people died strictly by firing squad. And they got these people, like they got the people to shoot them by basically just like brainwashing them and using mob mentality to like get their buddies to do it. And then they like, there was no ever like direct orders, like you have to shoot these people, otherwise we're gonna like come down on you. Like that was never a thing. There's just like an order came down and it went all the way down the chain. Then people just assumed that they would get hurt. And then next thing you know, it's like culture. So it's like, they were just doing it because that's what they did. Right. So it's
there's a book Jordan Peterson recommends, and I can't remember what it is, but it just basically talks about that, the banality of evil, right? That it, how ordinary people just came to do these horrific atrocities. And that is kind of the norm. Like people just kind of go with the status quo, right? Like if that became the status quo today, most people would exuberantly or just kind of shrug their shoulders and go along with it. Cause most people are sheep that way. They just kind of follow. But there was a study that looked at, okay, what made the moral heroes different? What was different about them? How did they become moral heroes? What was their childhood like? What all this kind of stuff? And they noticed there was no difference in like social class. So in other words, lower, upper class, there was a proportionate amount from each class and from each area and region in Germany. But the one thing that moral heroes had in common, to each other, was that they were raised very differently than traditional German families. In traditional German families at the time, again, we're talking about a culture that was brutal to children, right? That would have these post or these late abortions, they call them, where they smash the baby. It was common practice to use corporal punishment, hit children, and use very strict discipline with them. It was like hit them with sticks, right? It was common practice to put crying infants in bunting bags and just like nail the bag up to a tree and let them sit there in their own filth and cry all day while they got some work done. But the moral heroes. Jeez,
my mom must have copied their handbook.
There you go. Yeah, you're, and I mean, you're a strong Aryan looking motherfucker too. I mean, you
actually, I've had a patient say that to me once. Yeah. To the most wildly racist person I've ever met in my life, called me a strong Aryan boy. So,
Wow, I can see it.
Not exactly a compliment these days.
No. But what this study found was that the moral heroes, the one thing their parenting techniques departed dramatically from most Germans, in that their parents appealed to would use argumentation instead of corporal punishment to discipline them or to guide them, I guess. So they would appeal to them as rational humans and make arguments about why they should do this or why they should do that. They didn't just say my way or the highway or the stick kind of thing. Yeah. So that I think is an important lesson to learn about, you know, how we value life and how we value children can very often determine what our societies look like. And if children are viewed as disposable and, you know, life is not looked at as sacrosanct, you know, you get a very different society than one that is, let's say, very traditional. And we don't have sex even before marriage because there's a risk of pregnancy and unwanted pregnancy. And, you know, we don't want that. We want wanted pregnancies and things like that. Right.
Is that why that's there? Are we saying that's why that there's no sex before marriage in all the good books?
Well, I think that's part of it. Right. You want that commitment beforehand. And certainly, you know, like when we moved out of tribal, I guess, culture or tribal, paleo tribal kind of culture and started having marriages, I mean, that was designed to create a, you know, the man is the resource object. That the commitment is, as a man, I'm going to make sure you're protected and provided for. And I'm doing that because I have a high trust that children that you're birthing are mine, that my genetic lineage is going to be, you know, promulgated. Right. Mm. And so, you know, emerging from that is, look, if you're having a bunch of sex before marriage, you can't be sure that this girl didn't have sex with someone else, that this child's yours, that, you know, so
it's true. Gotta watch out.
It was a lot of that involved in it. And but yeah, I mean, that kind of society looks very different than one who looks at the government as spouse, as husband, as provider and protector. So we see something very different. Anyways, we started talking about abortion. We got to Nazis and
don't get me going on Nazis or World War II, because I won't stop.
But speaking of premarital sex, you know, we could make the argument. Here's the one thing I don't completely buy from the pro-life side, though. Like, again, I get that a third trimester fetus is essentially a baby, like, that should be protected, that there's no, and I think for the most part they are. Like, I don't think there's very many third trimester abortions, even though it's actually legal in Canada right up to the point of birth to have an abortion. They're almost never done unless I think the mom's life is at risk. And why are they never done? Well, because it's risky. It's too risky, and it's kind of morally repugnant at the same time. So
yeah,
it seems like even without regulation banning it, it's very rare that it happens. And so I get behind that side of the pro-life. But the thing that I find difficult to wrap my head around is life begins at the moment of conception. And that's because conception isn't a specific point in time, right? It's a continuum. It happens over a period of hours. So you get the impression that they're trying to pin down an exact moment of ensoulment when that thing. And I know there's videos of like a light, an embryo lighting up at a particular moment or something like that. When fertilization happens, and they say, you know, the Christians will say, well, that's the moment of ensoulment. I don't know, maybe, but what if you kill that thing like a second before that, and you know, I have a hard time believing that a second before that it's not murder, and then a second afterwards it's murder, right? And so I have a difficult.
Before that would just be like contraceptives, you know, like it's the same thing. That egg that could be if it was fertilized and then aborted is the same egg that's being aborted by taking contraceptives. It's just prior right,
but
to
they
it.
Would, but they would say it was never fertilized.
Yeah, right? I see what you're saying.
It's a moment of conception or fertilization that is when life begins. And they say that's, you know, I've heard Ben Shapiro argue this before. I actually wanted to find an AI or a like one of those deep fake programs that I could be. I want it to be three Ben Shapiros arguing about abortion from different sides. and the third Ben Shapiro was going to come in. Like one Ben Shapiro was going to talk about how life begins at the moment of conception, and that's you know, you can't deny that that's not human. It's genetically unique, and it will grow into a full size adult male. Or adult human, and so killing that is
murder.
And then I was going to have another Ben Shapiro arguing in castle doctrine or evictionism, saying, "Yes, that's a human, but blah blah blah. You need to have the right to kill trespassers. That's a basic human right." And then I was going to have a third Ben Shapiro come in at the end and say, life beginning at the moment of conception is arbitrary. Life actually begins at the moment of spermatogenesis, when sperms are born. That they are unique DNA individual humans, and masturbation is genocide, and so is procreation, because you're killing those humans prematurely.
Make them all, just throw in a Trump voice, and Trump's just like, wait, what the fuck are we talking about? Yeah, just, yeah. I'll fight with anybody about whatever you want me to fight about.
Exactly. Yeah, I was thinking about doing a series where, like, debating all sides of the issue, because one of the problems, and here's the thing that I guess sparked this whole episode. I can see both sides. I can make steel man arguments from both sides, but most people arguing in this space aren't even libertarians. So I feel like they don't, their opinion doesn't matter, because they want a gang of human trafficking, pedophilic thugs to solve their problems.
Yeah. And
so you've rendered yourself, all your arguments irrelevant, because you're a dumb retard.
Sorry, I got an excited lab pup trying to crawl all over me here.
Good, bring her up.
Hey,
come here.
What's her name? Well, he's Kylo.
Kylo.
But he's a little big for the house. But it's too cold to leave him outside all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that was it. I think that's it. Catharsis achieved. I've ranted about everything I wanted to rant about today.
We've ranted about borders, abortions, and Bud Lights.
Yeah. Well, I haven't ranted about Bud Lights. Do you have anything to say about Bud Lights, or are we back in Bud Light's good graces now that Kid Rock and Bud Light CEO have made amends?
Oh, Bud Light is back.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shane Gillis is a spokesperson and Post right. Malone. So
right. And I don't know if you saw that Kid Rock was on Joe Rogan recently.
Yeah,
talking about how Bud Light's back in his good graces again.
I mean, that guy, I'm sure, is just a PR nightmare to just maintain any semblance of control over that guy. I think his whole brand would basically be that he is uncontrollable, though. So in that sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was saying that I think Bud Light wanted him to do a promo, but most of the things they were pitching at him were like too cheesy or dumb for him. And
that's saying something.
You guys aren't going to want to do what I would recommend. So let's just shake and be friends and like leave it at that.
Yeah, well, they signed Shane Gillis and Post Malone, so.
But Doritos, now they have one-upped Bud Light. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God, I got to show you this. Hold on.
Wait, they did the whole woke thing too?
They went beyond woke with this one. Hold on now. See if I can find it.
We got a lot of leg room out of the borders and borsions.
Yeah, here we go. Let's share the screen. So Doritos just hired a self-described pedophile as a brand ambassador.
When did they do that? March 5th. Recently then. Oh boy. Yeah. That's, I just need to see Kid Rock shooting bags of Doritos with his, with his 12 gauge.
I don't know.
How do you look at what just happened and the actual sales numbers and still follow through with something like this?
Doritos fires brand ambassador who tweeted about doing thuggish things to a minor. Fox News reports that Doritos Spain terminated their relationship with transgender influencer Ivan Gonzalez Renedo, who goes by the stage name Samantha Hudson, after the company came under intense backlash for posting a video on Instagram featuring Hudson. A spokesperson for Doritos Spain confirmed to Rolling Stone magazine that a short promo called Crunch Talks was posted on Sunday and then removed on Monday. It emphasized that the video was not part of a larger brand ambassador campaign. Spokesperson also revealed that Hudson had been terminated from the company due to making controversial comments in the past. We have ended the relationship and stopped all related campaign activity. We strongly condemn words or actions that promote violence or sexism of any kind. Yeah.
When did they sign them as a spokesperson? Like, was this all within a few days? Like, they signed, realized, and
I think they did a video. I think it was similar to the Dylan Mulvaney thing, right? Like, the Dylan Mulvaney thing was with Bud Light, was just they sent out a bunch of personalized Bud Light cans to a bunch of TikTok influencers. They just went down the line and
yeah, it was not like them.
But it backfired in that they didn't vet these people and conservatives got upset, but I suspect it was something similar to that. But here you have a person, look at this. Here she or he or whatever is saying, I advocate for the destruction and for the annihilation of the traditional family. these are the people.
Who is doing like the media hiring for these corporations? They need to start vetting them.
I know. It's insane. But this is where you go. I mean, when you're trying to appease, and this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to be cool and appease the woke crowd, right? Show that they're whatever allies and they're good, you know. But these woke people are absolutely insane, mentally deranged people, and you're going to end up with this happening. And
I mean, it's good entertainment for sure. Keep doing it, because every couple of months, I want to see a big name brand go down because they did some dumb shit.
Wow. I think hopefully corporations are learning some valuable lessons here about this stuff. Like, stick to talking about how great your product is, and well, then again, I mean, beer commercials were always about guys getting hot women, so I guess sex does sell. Appealing to some culture sells, but I don't know.
I mean, you got to think about the cultures that you're selling to, though. Like, Bud Light is kind of a
Doritos
a reach.
Doritos is for I don't know how popular Doritos are in the pedophile community. Like, is that your biggest market share right there? The pedophiles, maybe,
or maybe people who don't like pedophiles.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there's only two types of people, right?
Right.
People who like pedophiles and people who don't like pedophiles.
Yeah.
People who are pedophiles? I don't know. You get what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, I think you're supposed to call them minor attracted individuals now, Jared. In fact,
no, that's one I'm not subscribing to. A pedophile is a pedophile.
Yeah. Who was saying Oh man, there was someone. There was a post recently, or some political thing, talking about protecting minor attracted individuals.
Protecting them from themselves. Lock them in a padded cell. If it looks like a pedophile and talks like a pedophile, it's probably a pedophile.
Yeah, I think I heard it on Rogan here. Let's watch this real quick. See what they say here.
This one's been driving me fucking crazy lately. Minor attracted persons.
Yes.
I saw two politicians in two different speeches talk about protecting minor attracted persons. You're talking about pedophiles.
That's what we're talking about.
It must be that these people have no children. It must be. I don't know. If they do, they're monsters. This idea that you are going to minimize the harm caused by evil criminals who steal children's lives, ruin their lives forever, and you're just going to call them a minor attracted person and try to say that it's an identity? To what? For what reason? To what end? Like, why would you want to do that?
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I don't think I got to say it, so I probably shouldn't, but those ones need some tough treatment, I think.
Yeah, would chipper go burr?
Yeah. There's not many groups of people where I would say throw them over the barge. It's probably one of them.
Amen. Amen. All right. Well, that's been about an hour. We've talked about borders, abortions, pedophiles, Nazis.
All the necessities, really.
All the basic things that one would have in normal, polite conversation in society. Guys,
table talk with Tim Moen.
Table talk. Yeah. Table talk. Tim Moen. How about that weather? No. How about them abortions?
Where do you stand on border crossings and Nazi firing squads?
Yeah. Why do you think Nazis were so evil? What made them moral heroes? What side of history would you come down on if things change right now? Are you a status quo keeper? I need to know these things before we can talk about the weather.
The weather changes all the time.
Yeah. All right, guys, listen, if you have anything you want young Jared and I to talk about on future episodes, please comment below. Actually, there was a comment someone made that they wanted us to talk about. Maybe we should get to that. Hold on. Where are the comments on my YouTube thing? There we go. Latest comments. Yeah. Oh, it's gone. I should have wrote it down. Anyways, I'll write them down next time. Guys, comment down below what you want us to talk about. Oh, I think it was something about Quebec and are they part of Confederation or are they truly? I don't know.
Ugh.
Yeah. I'll take a look for that comment. Maybe I'll address it in a future episode. Make sure you smash that subscribe button and that like button and that notification bell. Just like make sure you get all the buttons. Look, guys, I know we're not consistent. Like we put these out on different days and you know, we're shift workers. What can you say? We're all over the map. So if you want to get notified when we're dropping a new episode, you got to make sure you're subscribing and hitting that notification bell. And then you're getting the latest up-to-date thoughts that you need to be getting from our brains to yours. So Jared,
obviously, yeah, check out Born in a Barn. Yeah. Finding our voice and, hopefully we can take off. I mean, the last video I posted on Instagram got 3,500 views in a day. So
holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
really good.
The algorithm gets a hold of the odd video and they take off pretty fast. But nice. Yeah, check it out. Instagram, YouTube, Spotify has 2 listeners. I think podcasting is not for me. So we're going to switch it up to go vlog style. But
yeah. You know that in Newfoundland, they don't say born in a barn. They say born on a raft.
Born on a raft, eh?
Yeah, my wife says that to me all the time. Were you born on a raft? I'm like, what? You mean a barn?
Yeah. Anyways. I'm gonna do a podcast in the barn at my parents' place this summer. So.
Oh, cool. Love it.
Let's see how it goes.
Awesome. All right, buddy. Well, till next time. We'll catch you later.
Sounds.